is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Ricky Grundin Sr. We had an awesome conversation that started with two truths and a lie and then went on to talk about lessons learned and wisdom from 50 years of financial advisory and almost 50 years of marriage. And there is a lot of wisdom to be gained and learned from Ricky. We talked about the importance of purpose, vision, and mission. We talked about how his relationship and his faith has informed the way that he's worked with clients in an absolutely beautiful way. We talked about the importance of focusing on your plan when it comes to becoming financially successful, both in the short term, the midterm, and certainly the long term. And then we closed with an awesome difference-making tip. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Ricky, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please, sir.
Okay. One truth is that my wife and I have been married 48 years. We have 8 children together. We have 12 grandchildren, and we have 1 great-granddaughter. Another one is that when I first asked my wife to marry me, she said no. And finally, I graduated at the top of my class with a finance degree in 1974 from the University of North Texas.
Oh, those are excellent. Married for 48 years, 8 kids, 12 grandkids, and a great grandchild. Your wife said no the first time, and you graduated. What was the third one, Ricky?
I graduated at the top of my class at the University of North Texas in 1974.
All right. Well, it pains me to not guess that your wife said no, but I think that that's true. So I'm going to say that you didn't graduate number one in your class.
You are exactly right. In fact, I only lasted 3 semesters.
Good enough. Good enough. Good enough. A great grandchild. Does that boggle your mind? Is it like, what do you think about that?
Well, I just love having the, I'm a family steward. And so from the very beginning, we wanted a large family, and we had like 8 kids, and they were 20 years apart from the oldest to the youngest. It's somewhat humorous that it took us, if you do the math, it took us 40 years to empty nests. And so that happened about 6 or 7 years ago. And we're having the time of our life with our grandkids, with our own children. And we'd like to see them more, but I still enjoy what I do, and I'm invested in it.
That's excellent. So 48 years of marriage, do you ever bring up to your wife and remind her that she said no?
Oh, yeah, she knows. She said the beautiful part about it, George, is that and this is what's so meaningful to me. And, you know, you never know where your path is going to go. But we knew each other, and I had made some bad decisions with the wrong people. And that's why I only lasted 3 semesters at the University of North Texas. But all that turned out to be a huge blessing. And so when I asked her to marry me, she said no. I got down on one knee. I slipped off the couch, and I got down on one knee, and I said, "Marcia, is there anything in me you can marry someday?" And she set the vision for our family. And she said, "I want a man that's going to raise our family and according to God's word, and treat me and live in that way together." And I said, "Well, will you watch me and see if I can win you?" So we were married 8 months later, and we've been married ever since. She came in on January, that was October of 75. She came in on January of 3rd, 1976. She sat in my lap in my little insurance office, and she said, "I think we can get married." So that was a demarcation in my life from January 3rd, 19. I have been on the straight and narrow voluntarily.
That story literally gave me chills. That is awesome. Yeah. Marcia set the vision for the family.
She sure did. Yeah. And we've lived it for 48 years.
I think that that's incredible.
Thank you.
So many different questions. Well, I'll ask you, what is top of mind for you, Ricky?
Top of mind for me, and has been for many years, is purpose, vision, and mission. And the reason I say that is because I used to, for 16 years, I commuted to North Dallas. I live in Denton. That's Dallas, 38 miles away, 36 miles away. But I commuted to Denton, I mean, to Dallas. And then there came a time, that was probably, I was from 36 to about 40, 50 years old. And I would drive and think, you know, why am I here? Why was I born? Why me? Why now? And I struggled with that on those drives to Dallas on a regular basis. And so it behooved me to search out if there's not two grains of sand on the beach that are the same. They're not a snowflake that's the same. When you watch a waterfall come down, if there's not another drop of water that's ever in all of eternity been the same, there's nobody else like me. So I set out in the late 80s to determine what is my place in the world, why was I born, and how can I influence the world and my environment and the people around me and elevate them to a better life. And so out of that came a quest to find out why I was born. And that generated my purpose. And then I had to create we created a family vision, and we created a family mission. And then, of course, that spilled over. That was a big deal, George. What I was doing is I was also trying to do a business plan, writing my business plan, vision, and mission. And I thought to myself, well, I'm all invested in my business, but the business is an aspect of not who I am, but what I am to provide for my family. My family is the thing. So we created a family, what we called a family vision and mission statement back in, probably we finished it in 1992.
How long is it?
How long is it? Well, the vision for our family is that we would be a star witness for Christ. And that my purpose at the time in that aspect was that I came down to is to be a husband and a provider and a protector for my family.
Was it easy to come to that?
No, it took 4 years. We would get a babysitter. Then the children were much smaller, of course, and we only had four at that time. But we'd get a babysitter. We'd go Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and go get a hotel and read and talk and write things down about our goals, objectives, things that we valued, aspects about ourselves that would influence our purpose. It took about 4 years.
So that was very wise to recognize that we need to, well, I'm guessing you've discovered that you needed to remove yourself from the situation, and not that family is a distraction, but when you have four kids running around, it's harder to have those kinds of conversations.
Yes. And it was quite a relief, and we enjoyed it. We went out to dinner, and we stayed in a nice hotel, and we went out to dinner, and we enjoyed each other's company, and we would pull out our any resources we had. Back then, it would be cassette tapes to listen to, and about vision and mission, about goal setting and things. But the preeminent, always what was driving us was that we would, like my wife set the vision very first, is that we would develop a family and have a family that was led by Christ and live according to biblical principles.
And 48 years and 8 kids, 12 grandkids, great grandkid. Is that easy? Is it hard? Both?
Well, thank you for asking. No, it's a little hard in the sense that I made the decision as we were going through this process that I was not going to be a missionary. I was not going to be a preacher or a pastor. I was not going to be a youth minister. I was going to remain in the investment advisory, at that time, the investment advisory business, because I felt like I would have the opportunity to influence people, and not necessarily in the way I wanted them, but just to have a conversation similar to what we're having today. And then I'd be able to influence people that maybe would never have the opportunity to, or I would never have the opportunity. So I stayed in it. That developed into a conviction of mine that I don't work. I have a ministry. You know, some countries have a ministry of finance. Hmm. Well, this is our ministry. And so retirement was never a question in my mind, George. And now that I'm nearing 50 years in the business, it's like, I love what I do and I love our clients, but there's time restraints. And so I have to find a balance between, okay, being with the grandkids, being with my own children, traveling to see them, and maintaining the work that I enjoy doing so much.
Are all your clients followers, believers, Christians?
No, and certainly not required. I won't call it my ethos. It's just, you know, it's just how I want to live. And I think that, Proverbs, wisdom books, things like that just are so simple to follow if you can follow them. And or if you have a desire to look at, you know, just read and see the consequences of bad decisions. And so you want to avoid that. And I've made so many bad decisions prior to Marcia setting the vision for our family. I never wanted to go back to that. That was very painful. Never wanted to go back to that.
So when you think about the Ministry of Finance, which I think is absolutely fantastic. I think that that's great. Do you think about you are leading people through personal finance? Your work is helping people to become financially secure, to reach their financial goals and objectives?
Yes, absolutely. However, we are planning centric and we're not investment centric. And I've got my securities license in the early 80s. I have been investment centric in the past. I have had the part of my life as a market timer. And one of the things I learned in the throughout the last from about 95 to about 2002 is don't confuse a bull market with skill. And so we were really good in the bull market of the late 90s in market timing. So to answer your question, being planning centric is it allows us to deeply understand the clients that we work with. And we go through our process and their financial plan, their dreams and goals, influence and really direct us on how things will be invested.
Got it. Which certainly makes sense. What is the value of, what is the right question here? If Jesus were a financial advisor, how would he counsel people? How would that look?
Yeah. Well, let me just kind of lead into that by saying that just doing a little research over the years, I believe that there's more verses on money and in the Bible than there are on faith and prayer combined. So that's not all Jesus. That's just collectively from Proverbs and good decisions because you have an understanding of money. Or you don't have to have understanding, you just have to do what's there. But I would say that Jesus would do like, frankly, we live. We are charitable. We are considerate of others. We do our best to not judge others. And in the decisions that they make, we don't do that. I think that he would do almost like, well, not like he said in the Bible, he said, don't, in the parable that he gave is don't bury your talents. One got scared and buried thing, because I wanted, oh, good master, I wanted to give you back what you gave me. And the other was tenfold. And Jesus said, well done. The master said, well done, my good and faithful servant. So the real aspect of it is how Jesus would best is be faithful in the resources that you've been granted and aspire to developing resources so you can elevate the lives of others.
What do you think about the idea of invitation versus compulsion? So you're certainly not forcing people to save money when you're looking around at the general at the general public or even the country. I have a problem personally with the amount of debt and the amount of money that the government is spending. I don't see ourselves being good stewards of our resources. What are your thoughts on what I said?
The way I would approach that is I can't control that. If I really want to make an influence, and I did run for public office 15 years ago as a state representative and just barely missed it, but that was the Lord's design as well, because I would have missed some really important events with my children. But back to your question on the national debt, I can't control that. I could be a precinct chairman locally, and I can have a lot of influence in the environment and the place where I live, but I can't control that. And there are many things that go on that I have no control over. And so I'm going to focus on the things I can control and be the best steward of the talents that I have and draw out the best talents, if I'm able, to the people that want to align with us.
So it's a function of figuring out, and you help your clients figure out essentially the work that you did, which is what's most important to you. What are you here to do? And then if that's what you desire, here are the steps. Here are some options for actually completing that from a financial standpoint.
Yeah, I think we go deeper than that. And I know there are a lot of phenomenal financial planners that go deep, and we're not really life planners. If you're familiar with John Bowen's CEG program, we adopted that about a little less than 20 years ago, and we've been doing financial planning related to CEG. So that means that we go through a series of questions. We are going to deeply understand their values. We're going to understand their important relationships, and I won't go into a lot of it right now. But we're going to understand those things, and we're going to understand the risk tolerance, and what's going to keep them in their seat when the market goes south. We're broadly diversified, and we're not picking stocks, and we're not timing the market, and we're educating all the time on the importance of a broadly diversified portfolio. And like some of your other podcasts that I listen to that were really excellent, so just the long-term view. I think that's been proven over and over again, but the emotions are overwhelming. And so if we can help people focus on the things they can control and diversify away the things that are, to the extent we can, diversify the things we can't control and just stick to our plan, the beauty of my tenure, 50 years, that I've lived from the first financial plans we did in 1986 till today, and I've seen what's happened in those people's lives. I've seen what's happened in their children's life. In fact, my associate and I, Dave Reagan, he's the adjunct professor at University of North Texas in financial planning, but together we published a book called The Wealth Builder Challenge. And we took the things that our successful clients did and compared them. Back, you remember Forbes was Henry, high earner, not rich yet. And we made up Stan, spend the day all now. And we contrasted those things to, how different people lived and what the outcome is. So it's, everybody's concerned about it. Every meeting we have, it's the debt, it's the political climate. How are we going to get through this? What about the world situation? What about the Middle East? You focus on the plan, and then that comes back to, I think, I just want to say that our empathy that we have for the people we work with, that we never invested in a way to begin with because we understood them well enough that wouldn't allow them to stay focused on what they are doing and what we're doing for them.
Focus on the plan.
Yes, sir.
It's certainly not a surprise that people are interested in talking about what's going on. And there's things all over the world that are taking our attention and things that are probably worthy of our attention. But just because they're worthy of our attention doesn't mean we can do anything about it. So by focusing on the plan, I imagine that that helps us to feel more in control.
Yeah, more in control and more confidence. When you develop the plan and you set out the objectives that we're going to accomplish and try to discern a reasonable rate of return that the portfolio can provide over a period of years, and then every quarter or sometimes semi-annually, longer the clients have been with us, they go to maybe annual meetings, but newer clients for the first 4 or 5 years, whatever the case may be, we do quarterly meetings and in person or by Zoom. And what we do is we look at the investment returns. If they're in a down market, we always go back and show, okay, here are the investment returns. Here's what our goal that we're going to accomplish. Now, we're not hitting that goal this year. Remember, this year we got twice that much, three times that much. So we're on target, and we're on target for accomplishing what you want. And remember, because of your concern about down markets and the way you feel about that, we don't have all your money in the market. You know, we have this carved out over here that's just special for you, that's going to provide your income for the next 5 years, regardless of what the market has done. And then I think with the time and tenure I have in the business, starting in 1974, in the insurance business, right at the tail end of 73, 74, oil embargo, impeachment of Nixon, and the resignation of Nixon, and the end of the Vietnam War, and then hyperinflation coming in, and then having lived through every down market since then, it's in here. And I know what that feels like, and I know it hurts. But we're going to get through this. As long as we have, this is what I think the clients eventually learned, as long as we have a rule of law, private property rights backed by rule of law. I don't know what the busiest street is in your area on the highway, but in our area, it's in North Dallas, and it's called LBJ Freeway. And I ask, when the market is down, is there traffic on LBJ Freeway? And they go, oh, yeah, we can't even get home. It's miserable. And I said, okay, all those people are going to get a haircut on the way home. They're going to buy groceries. They're going to get tires. They're gonna do all of these things, so you have the velocity of money, and these things will right themselves. Someday they may not, but this is the way it is now. And that after a while, they begin to say, you know, that's right. You know, and then after 2008, 2009, to watch that bounce off the bottom when all the prognosticators, really smart people in our industry, if you will, said that there was another 20% down to go, and the market popped that week and was up 25% in 1 week and never looked back. You know, everybody was made whole after a 50% loss in the S&P 500 in about 18 months to 20 months. So it's just, I think that maybe helps. I don't want to give undue credit to myself, but, you know, when you had somebody that's actually lived through it and walked with people through it, and especially the people who've been with me that long, nobody likes it, George. Nobody likes it. But it's part of the process.
Nobody likes it. It's part of the process. Focus on the plan. I love it. Well, Ricky, you've given us a lot, but we're ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for us, sir?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Difference-making tip.
A difference-making tip. Well, we really... One of the things that immediately when I was asked to be on this, I went to your website and I looked at that you have the Alignment Academy. Well, I needed you back 50 years ago, and I'm just so impressed. And so my tips are if there's anyone that listens to this, that it is imperative that you work through the process of your purpose. Simon Sinek said your why. It's a great book. Okay, it's 8 or 9 years old now, but it's and some of the examples may not be relevant today, But the underlying aspect is, what is your why? Why are you doing this? Most people are focused on the how and what. Well, you know, you can end up chasing rabbits on the how and what. And you, if you have a purpose, like Viktor Frankl said, who, you know, one of the best authors and books ever sold, who spent, what, how many years? 2 years in the concentration camp and came out on the other side. One must have a purpose and why to make it through this life. So my tips would be, whatever you have to do, and I think after the time I've invested with you, I would say hire you guys, if that's what you do, and help people find their vision and their mission and function through your purpose.
Well, I think that is great stuff that definitely gets a come. Ricky, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
Yes, our website is grunden.com, grunden.com. And we have a Facebook page. It's Grunden. And we also have, I'm on LinkedIn. And we'd appreciate that, enjoy having a conversation with anyone that wanted to follow up.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Ricky your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to grunden.com, grunden.com. Find them on Facebook and LinkedIn as well. And take Ricky up on that offer to have a conversation and find out if working with him and his firm are a good fit. Thanks again, Ricky.
All right. Thank you very much, George. Enjoyed meeting you. Enjoy the time.
Likewise. Finally, a friendly reminder, it's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.